You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you and good afternoon. Welcome to our show, this August 30th edition on this Friday. With us, the congressman from Congressional District 3, Raul Grijalva. He was a member of the TUSD School Board. He was a member of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, elected 2000 and what to Congress? Gosh, it goes away. 2002.
Seems like just yesterday.
It does, and you know what yesterday was like. The question, of course, I want to ask you is how involved with you and what role did you play in the election of Rahina Romero as she won the nomination for mayor out of the Democratic primary on Tuesday? What role did you play?
Well, let's begin with the point that Regina is a dear friend. Her family, Ruben and her kids are dear friends, and that relationship has been going on since 25 years. And so, on that note, you know, they're friends. And when she was discussing with herself and her friends and her family about going into that primary for mayor, she talked to me. And I told her that whatever she needed, I would help her with, because she has done the same for me. I think that I did tell her, though, John, that I think that she needed to prepare herself, that she was going to get hit and that it was going to get personal, and the higher, and that, you know, some of the angst that she was going to get was, you know, deflected from me, you know, people that know that we're allies and friends. And that to prepare herself and to just ignore it and just grind it out, and that's what she did. Her campaign, Nate, Elvira, Hortensia, that I got to see on a daily basis for the last month, working her campaign, they were really, really talented people that worked it, knew what they were doing, and I thought they put together a smart, focused and very disciplined campaign. I think that's key. And Regina stayed on message, got it out and grinded out the attacks, ignored them, rejected fighting at the same level, and hurling back personal accusations. And I think that she did the smart thing. When the totals are done, she's going to have over 50% in this three-way primary, and I think that's pretty significant.
Did you pick up the phone and call outside sources and third-party people to organize dark money for her campaign?
No.
Did you operate in any way, shape, or form in connection with those people?
No. But I have worked with United Food and Commercial
Workers. Well, you're very close to them. I mean, most people would suggest you'd pick up the phone and say, can you help?
Yeah, they could suggest that, but that didn't happen.
You didn't? You weren't asked to do that?
No.
You didn't want to do that?
No. I think once Regina earned the endorsement
but
of
who late. Did that? Who orchestrated all that? That's $1.5 million, Congressman.
Yeah. Well,
that's not pittance.
Yeah. Yes. 2 days ago, it was $500,000.
Well, whatever. What do you think it was?
I think those figures are public. That's the issue with an independent.
Well, $1 million at least.
Independent expenditure companies, they have to disclose $500 or more contributions.
Okay.
Dark money is undisclosed contributions, like APS trying to stack the corporation commission. Right. It takes 3 years to find out they put millions and millions, and so did TEP, into trying to get their people into the corporation commission. Dark money from the Koch brothers helped Ducey. That doesn't come out till later because they don't have to disclose. This was up front. And I really think that, you know, to delegitimize what Regina and her team did is, I don't think that's fair. And what to diligence, you know, and we're not talking about what Lane Santa Cruz and her volunteers and the young people that work for her. She's going to be at 44%. She's running against two individuals that have already run before and had that name ID, against an individual who had the kind of downtown leadership pedigree as well. And she won 44%. A significant victory in Ward 1, and I think people have to understand that is what is occurring. The turnout was the highest we've had in a primary in a long, long time for a city election, and what the groups that came in to help Regina, they could not coordinate. That's against the law. You could not co-plan and run a campaign that way. There has to be that wall of separation. That's the
law. Between the candidate and those entities, yes.
Between the campaign and because of who I am.
Would Rahina won without that money?
I think she would have. But the point being that these groups, and let's look at who the groups are before we label them as some sort of nefarious dark money group that's out manipulating and pulling strings. This is organized labor. United Food and Commercial Workers, also CHISPA, environmental organizations working together, Planned Parenthood, Latino Advocacy Group, Lucha, and a couple of others I can't remember now. The point being that these are all issue-based advocacy groups, and Regina earned the endorsement of those organizations. They then, wanting somebody to represent their interest at the highest position in the city, in city government, got behind her and did what they did to promote their candidate because their candidate stood with them on the issues. Now, if some other candidate would have received those endorsements and received the kind of help that Regina received from these groups in terms of trying to get her elected, would we be having the same discussion about dark money? I doubt it. I really do. Because there's a lot of Chicken Little stuff going on now to try to make this election less significant than it is for both Regina and for Lane. Chicken Little, the sky is falling. The city will fall apart. Thank God there's some boys on the city council that'll keep the wheels running on this.
Where do you think that's coming from? Is that a business community thought?
I think it's just people not understanding that this woman, Regina Romero, is smart, has the capacity, is eminently qualified for this position, and won an election in an overwhelming way, and over 50% in the primary. You can't just dismiss that and try to delegitimize it because...
You can't ignore it either. I don't think you can say, look, we threw $1 million at this, it had no effect at all.
Well, I don't think it's... Well, When the final figures come out, we'll deal with what that final figure is. But, I remember, John, 2002, 9-way primary. We're just talking about that. When I won the primary for Congress and have had the privilege to represent that area and big parts of Tucson since then. I remember that leading up to that campaign, John, and that on your show, people would come on, Dossier, Raul is doing this, he ruined the county, he's going to ruin the national government, on and on. We just kept grinding it out and grinding it out. And at the end of the day, the next day, out of some morbid curiosity that I had, John, I wanted to hear what people are going to say after we won. And the first thing I hear is that the reason Raul won is because he brought busloads of people from Mexico to come and vote. again, and it was on your show, and I don't know who was saying it, but the fact of the matter is that, again, an effort to delegitimize something that I thought was that we had earned. And Regina earned this election, and the party is no longer neutral, the Democratic Party. They have to get behind their candidate, and they will. The leadership of the party is good. And then we go forward because we still have a general election, and one should never underestimate one's opponent at any time. And we're not walking around with the tail between our legs or egg on our face. Thanks to, I think, is a really good campaign, and to the advocate groups that said we want to invest in this because we want somebody to speak for us. That's what happened. Simple as that, not more complicated than that.
You've been involved in other campaigns. Is there a Grijalva machine that you call a political machine that you want your associates and friends and people you support elected to office that you're more than willing to help them get there if you can?
I have.
Why not, right?
Look, when endorsing Regina was Andres Cano, Eva Dong from the Sunnyside School Board, Adelita Grijalva, Ms. Foster from the TUSD School Board, Richard Elias from Board of Supervisors. And myself.
Yeah.
And what's the common thread? The common thread that there is a philosophical base on how we do our politics, a certain set of values on how we do our politics. That's it. And so I support people that I feel are going to, are not careerists. They're in this to try to make some fundamental change to represent some interests that usually don't have a voice in this process. And of course,
what do you call that, a machine of some sort, a political machine?
No, I think there's a work ethic that other campaigns don't have. Period.
As this campaign unfolded and got toward the end, there was some pretty nasty campaigning against Steve Farley, a distortion of his voting record on Medicaid expansion, his voting record on teacher salary supports. That got pretty nasty from those third-party efforts. But, of course, Rahini can say, and I'm sure she would say, she had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, and she didn't.
Well, she could have rejected it at the time. She could have said, I don't like that kind of politics.
That would have required her knowing ahead of time what was going to happen would have already violated the law.
Well, I know, but I mean, afterwards, she could have said, I don't like this kind of politics.
the fact sheets that were pointed out, you know, about votes, those were recorded record, public record votes. And if there's a difference in what was said from what was voted upon, that was a mistake. But you know, those were public record votes, and they were noted so in the literature that we received at our house. And we received as many pieces of literature for the other candidates, primarily for Farley and for Regina at our house, as Mona and I as voters, as equal numbers, you know. Mr. Farley had a good campaign. He had excellent consultants that have been involved in congressional races and other races, so that he wasn't going in there with his hands tied behind his back. He had the very formidable Tucson Police Association, Officer Association, and the Firefighters Association. They put up signs. They did everything that to help him, and I don't begrudge that. They made a choice. They endorsed him, and they went out and supported him, just like Planned Parenthood went out and supported Regina.
Well, we've opened the door to very large outside money. That's for the very first time. We've seen it for the first time. Is that going to be a part of our political future from now on in local races like this?
Look, Citizens United, if everybody would concede that the issue of clean elections and the ordinance that's in place in Tucson is something that people abide with, I think that would dissipate. But when one person's abiding, two others are not, I think outside groups that care about these issues, that are progressive in nature, they feel they have to weigh in order to balance out the equation, because there's no limit on the other side.
Do you support Terry Goddard's effort
to open up where
the money comes from?
Absolutely.
Do you think there was a disclosure of where all the money that Regina received outside of the county came from?
It is. It is disclosed.
Everything, right. It's every dime.
Yeah. The issue is with Citizens United and what happened when we made corporations a person, and they are able to second or third parties hide their money, that what's happened is that now money controls a lot. And you can see it in Congress, you know, how decisions are made, what isn't voted upon and what is, and especially in the Senate now. So what I'm suggesting is that there's, at the very minimum, let's disclose who's behind it. Then, you know, voters are smart. They'll see who's behind it, and that'll help them make a decision as well. Voters knew that environmentalists, labor, advocacy groups, Latino and otherwise, and women's health organizations, primarily Planned Parenthood, were supporting Regina, and the majority of people identified with those issues and therefore identified with Regina.
Well, a lot of people would say now Raul Grijalva controls City Hall because she's going to be asking him how she should vote and what she should do. How dependent do you think Regina Romero is going to be on you as she takes over the mayor's office if she's fortunate enough to
win the general? Well, I think we're going to continue to be friends. I mean, that's not going to change. But again, you know, let's not promote any gender bias here in
the
issue.
Are you more powerful today than you've ever been before?
No, I'm.
No, seriously.
No, I just think the issues have caught up. I'm been consistent all these many years, and the issues have caught up. The public has caught up, and in the sense that they see that the issues I've been talking about are mainstream issues. They're not outside They're not fringe issues. When you talk about climate change, that's not an out fringe issue. When you talk about pay equity and good salaries for people, that's not a fringe issue. When you talk about public education being protected and not just giving it away to private for public charter schools, that's not a fringe issue. And so I think people have come to the realization with time that those are mainstream issues that people want for their families. And I really think that it, let's not, frankly, one of the things that has to happen with Regina, and people have to come to that understanding, that she's going to be the first woman, the first Latina as mayor. And because she's a woman, doesn't make her less capable, less strong, less certain. And she doesn't need me to hold her hand. She doesn't need anybody to hold her hand. She knows what she's doing. And I think I said in an interview before that those that underestimate her capacity to do this job are underestimating at their own risk.
I've talked to some business people today and yesterday that have their hair on fire, worried about her connection with the business community and her ability to cooperate with them. Should they have any concerns at all?
I don't think so. I think the quality of life in this city that I love, that I'm from and you are, that's priority number one to her. And the business community, in order to continue to do well, to prosper, to get through the hard times that might come ahead, I think they're going to find in Regina a partner that can work with them. And also, when you disagree, you disagree. I mean, for people to be pro-business doesn't mean you're pro-chamber and do everything that they tell you to do. In order to be pro-business doesn't mean that you have to be kowtow to one section of business in order to be legitimate. People shouldn't, you know, just like we don't want a car dealer to run this city and be the voice for business. Business is diverse like the city. Business is it all over. The vast majority of it is with 20 or less employees in this town. I think those businesses, those enterprises that hire people, over 55% of the people in Tucson work for small businesses, they're going to find an ally and a friend in Regina, and I think people are going to come to that realization.
Do you support the sanctuary status for the city of Tucson?
I think that's changed.
What do you mean?
I think that that election is going to be very interesting because I think it's gone beyond the idea of sanctuary, and I'll tell you why. And do I think at the end of the day, I'm probably going to vote for it. Yes, in answer to your question. This is why. I think it's expanded, and I've been talking to people about that. And I understand where Regina's coming from in terms of
she's opposed to
it. Yeah, the risk that it poses from the state, because, you know, the state would take money away if you wanted to ban plastic bags. The state would take money away if you wanted to give, but the court has now ruled differently, if you wanted to pay your employees above a certain level. Or require a certain minimum wage. But the point I'm trying to make with that is that it's expanded. You know, look at the indignities that have happened around the issue of immigration, primarily propelled by Trump, and the hatefulness, the outright racism on this issue. I think for a lot of people in Tucson, it's not just a vote about sanctuary anymore. It's a vote to say, no, I don't like the tone and the tenor and the ugliness of what's happening to immigration. I think that issue has gotten bigger than just the issue of sanctuary.
So that safety would be a statement from this community as
that would
well
be
as a policy.
Yeah, you know, the court does what it's going to do because it's going to get challenged. You know, the city will get challenged immediately on it by the state. But the fact remains that I think you're going to see people voting for it, not so much on what the initiative says, as to what they're making a statement of opposition to what they hear and what they sense out there.
What about the $15 minimum wage? Do you support that?
Yeah, I always have.
But Regina doesn't,
yeah,
she said.
Yeah, that's my point.
Okay, you're not going to call her up and say, switch on sanctuary, switch on the $15. You're not going to have that kind of influence. Or you don't want that kind of influence, or do you?
No, I don't want that kind of influence. And I, you know, she just made her position clear on that. The pragmatism of how you raise salaries here, I believe that we can go to 15. The state voters have already indicated 12, and that's coming up next year. And so, you know, the fact remains that, you know, if that's a difference of opinion, that's the reality of, you know, I hope will be the new mayor, and I'm certain will be the new mayor, Regina Romero, that she's an independent voice, and people are going to find that out, and I'm glad they will, because there's a lot to be proud of the statement that Tucson made in that primary. It's not just historic, but the significance too, and before people light their hair on fire, there is a fundamental, from the electric, a change going on in the way people perceive their leaderships and what they want from them. And I think Regina and certainly Lane are two good examples of a trend that is the future, not the past.
All right, you had nothing to do with the outside money. You made no calls. Do you know who did? Who coordinated that?
No.
They didn't ask you? You weren't aware of it?
You know, one has to assume that environmentalists are sitting around waiting for somebody to call, that labor is sitting around waiting for somebody to call, that Planned Parenthood and women's health that is under assault at the state level and at the national level, they're waiting for somebody to call. That United Food and Commercial Workers that want better working conditions for working people in that, they're waiting for somebody to call. These are independent, smart advocacy organization with a long history. They don't need me to call them about what's important. They don't need Regina to call them what's important. They know what's important. They felt that they needed an advocate, and they got behind her.
Yeah, I think they would have had an advocate, too, in Steve Farley, but that's just my opinion. Let me ask you to take the last 3 or 4 minutes of this interview and talk about what you expect when you get back to Congress. You know, there's no question the border is literally, at a breaking point. The numbers and the people that are under such stress and conditions that we've never even heard of, they're inhumane, and they're racist from the very beginning, and they have to change. I don't see that happening, Congressman. I don't see immigration reform. I see nothing at the border but maybe some more money taken from FEMA in the middle of this storm and put to the border to build a fence.
As the hurricane's about to hit Florida.
Yeah, well, figure that one out for me, please.
Yes, you know, I'm not a pessimist about it. I think the House of Representatives has to be a rational voice to continue. You know, we passed DACA.
Right.
We passed funding to increase the personnel that's necessary to deal with the asylum and refugee seekers. We have passed legislation to make DHS more accountable and transparent, but it dies in the Senate. My point being that until this election is over and there is a decision about who the next president of the United States is going to be, that this issue of immigration, this issue of the border is going to continue to be divisive, and it is important for Trump to keep it that way, because quite frankly, that's all he's got left in terms of an issue, and he wants to make this a culture war, and he wants to make it around immigration.
Well, I don't have to tell you that these U.S.-Mexico asylum programs that widen to reject all migrants, you've got literally thousands of people stacked up on the other side of the border. These are people. These are not just numbers. They're people.
And then the 59 detention centers in this country now have a serious outbreak of mumps, and it's been going on. People are being hospitalized, and though that's just the tip of a small iceberg about what the conditions in those private, for-profit detention centers that are making a tune of almost $4 billion a year from the federal government to provide this detention. And they have in their contract that DHS must keep at least 40,000 beds occupied as part of their contract. So, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that the more you have in detention, the more money these private firms are going to make. And this administration is not rigorous about standards. They're not rigorous about maintaining them, and the indignities and the cruelty that we've seen. Unfortunately, for this president to get reelected, he's got to make that the issue, and the rest of us, and those of us who live in the borderlands and are part of this community, are going to continue to be at the brunt of that.
Congressman, thanks for being with us.
No problem, John. Thanks
it's
a lot.
It's really great to have you here. Thank you so much. Congressman Ronald Grahama, Congressional District Number 3. We'll be back with more from Steve Kasacek, Ward 6 Councilman, after these messages. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum on this August 30th. Thanks so much for being with us. And with us now is Steve Kasacek, the Ward 6 Councilman for the City of Tucson. Councilman, welcome.
Hello there. You can ask me about the football game in Hawaii, or are we going to talk about something else?
Oh, for God's sake, what happened? Go ahead, tell me what happened.
I guess they didn't get off the plane.
No, they didn't. Didn't get off the plane. That's absolutely right. It's disgusting.
How do you possibly fly halfway to Russia and
I don't know.
Show up like that?
I have no idea. I have no idea. We're all disappointed. I don't know. I'll take NYU and two.
Well, I would hope that the defense shows up, but how much longer are we going to watch this?
We're not going to watch it very much longer. Let me ask you this. I just had a long conversation, extended conversation with Raul Grijalva. You got a new city council coming. You may have Rahina Romero as mayor. You certainly have one Ward 1 councilwoman that's new to the game. Same thing, Ward 4. New faces on this council. But I've said over and over again, and I've said it to you, and I've said it to people that would listen to me, that this council has enjoyed public support. You asked them for more money for roads, the voters said yes. You asked them for more money for parks, voters said yes. This is a referendum. These two particular requests from the public for additional tax money for improvements in parks and roads is a referendum of approval for this council as well as the mayor. But I don't know whether that's going to last through the new additions to the council. What do you think of the new makeup of the council, and what is the most challenging situation they face in this coming new council year?
Well, first of all, I think that we're going to be fine. The primary elections, this was not a coup d'etat. Rahina was elected to mayor, fair and square. I think it's a validation, just as you're talking about right now. I think that her election in the primary is a validation of the work that we've been doing at the mayor and council. We have worked together as a group. As you said, there will be a few new faces. So what's the toughest thing that we're going to face? The same thing for anybody in a new position is kind of figuring out how the process works, what the major issues are going to be. Budget. That means that Lane and Nikki, I'm assuming Nikki's going to win, are going to have to do their homework and get caught up to speed. There are some significant issues that we're facing in this community. We have a water contamination issue that it's already wound up in litigation against 3M and others. It may wind up taking a bigger step here soon with the Air National Guard and Department of Defense, and so they're going to have to get caught up to speed on that. So basically, it's doing your homework. And to that end, I've invited both of them to show up at a meeting I'm hosting next week on some significant Section 8 housing issues we've got, so that when they do show up in whatever it is, December, I guess, that they've got some background, and I'm going to invite both of them to come to meetings periodically if I think they're significant issues, so that they don't show up on day one without having some sort of a framework as to what issues are that we are facing. But I really think that the election, that Rahina moving over, politics ain't being bad. I got flyers from both candidates in the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, and some of them were pretty ugly. It's a difference in degree, not kind. I understand the whole thing about the money and, how bothered people are about it. I wish it wasn't that significant either. But there are support groups who represent, who are subject matter experts, whether it's the environment or labor or whatever it is, and they wrote checks and they supported her. I don't think there is any particular need for a hard pivot in any direction. There are six of us on the council to kind of modulate that. But at the end of the day, there's one mayor, not seven. And I do not believe that it's up to her to come and prove herself to us. We've all worked well together, me for the last 10 years with her, and Fimbres for the last 10 years with her, the other ones lesser amount of time. But what I do not want to see, and will do everything in my power to prevent, is for this council to turn into a TOSD school board, or if you look at the county board of supervisors, factions and silos and and all that. We can't go that direction because I think that the fact that we are working well together and the fact that we've worked through a recession and balanced our budget started a lot of potentially really positive processes in place with the business community, I think that served us well. And the community not only wants to see the governing bodies work well internally, but I think that they would also like to see us work well across jurisdictions. And I'm going to continue to advocate that we expand our relationship.
Well, I think issues such as the Sanctuary City situation, I don't know how voters are going to decide that one way or another, can pretty much pull us apart. Same thing with the $15 minimum wage. A lot of people very upset about that as well, business people. But, you know, there's always going to be those issues that will divide us. It's a matter of who's going to bring us together. You kind of hope that whoever's the next mayor has the skills to do that, because that's what we've enjoyed with Jonathan Rothschild. And I think we'd be obviously paying a real terrible price down the road if we didn't have somebody that understood that we have to do this together.
Well, and it's not so that burden does not necessarily fall on Rahina's shoulders. You know, she expressed a vision, and she has a right to, and if elected in November, to advocate for the policies that fit within that vision. The same would have been true of Farley. The same would have been true of Randy. You know, this council, I believe, is going to support that move. And yes, it'll be slightly to the left, but that's okay. I mean, that's kind of where Tucson is, and it's kind of where this council is too. If you kind of look down the line. She's not going to run us off the rails, and just as we have with Jonathan, we're going to continue working as a unit. There are going to be some 6-1 votes and some 5-2 votes, you know, of course, but 90% of the time we're together. And she also knows the issues that for instance, I've been leading on, and I think she's going to respect that. You know, the monastery work I've done, the zoning, the Broadway work, the PFC litigation, gun control, all that. But she has a right to put her stamp on the community if the public elects her, and I'm going to support her in that, and I'm going to work with her. And I think again that the fact that they are electing her validates us as a mayor and council and the work that we've done, and she's been a part of that. So let's look at some of the strengths that she brings. I mean, instead of lumping the obligation or the responsibility of herding six other kittens together. None of the rest of the six of us want to turn into a dysfunctional unit. So all of us have a stake in that. I mean, she can't, you know, you can't lay all that at her feet. I think that she brings a real potential for us to capitalize on some things that Jonathan started 4, 5, or 6 years ago, but really didn't follow through on strongly. And one of those is our relationship with Mexico and economic development with Mexico. We've got some great people working with Visit Tucson, Felipe Garcia, for instance, who are busy south of the border, and I think she can really be an advocate with us down there. And there are hundreds of millions of dollars in trade that we could capitalize on with that. So that's one example of something that I think she really brings to the table. And I wasn't at all the forums, and so I don't know if that was a real strong talking point for her. But I think that she, whether it was or not, she brings it. She clearly brings a stronger tie with our federal delegation than Jonathan has. So there's an opportunity for us to have advocacy. We wouldn't have had the streetcar without strong ties with our federal delegation. We have some serious environmental issues, and I mentioned the PFCs in our water supply. We're going to need a very strong relationship with our federal delegation to move us forward in terms of kickstarting some funds to help the remediation, the cost that it's going to take us to be drilling new wells and to be controlling plumes. So there's that tie that she brings that Jonathan never had and never would have. Her environment, she's working for the Center for Biological Diversity, her environmental ties. If I mentioned the county earlier, she has some strong ties within the environmental community, and people fly into this city, into this region, because of the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. That's something that we ought to be thumping our chests about. And so from the standpoint of the environmental community and ties there, again, I think that's something that she's in a stronger position than Jonathan was to capitalize on that. Small business ties. I mean, they were a big supporter of her during the community. During the election. All these things are areas that she brings to the table as a positive. And I think that we had to focus on that and say, okay, you're the mayor. There's one mayor. There's not seven. We're going to support. I think that she will beat Ackerley. We're going to support whoever that is. We're not going to run off in seven different directions because I think that would be bad for the community.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see who she puts in positions of, I think, advice for herself. I think that, every mayor's had some people who he's depended on for outside advice beyond his scope, and I think she's going to have to do that as well. She certainly knows the territory. She's been there, 12 years now as a member of the city council. I've had numerous conversations with her that have disturbed me greatly about her lack of making sense about some particular issues or being decisive. I have found her not to be decisive in many, many different major issues that we've talked about. But we will see who's going to win this general election. There's going to be a contest. She's going to have to run it whether she likes it or not, and she has to win it. And then if she becomes mayor, she has to, I think, bring people together rather than divide them. And I've seen particular council people divide us rather than bring us together, and that's not worked well. I have quite a few. I want to talk about the Rio Nuevo O'Kane, $65 million for the upgrades at the TCC. A little bit about what we think that the Arizona Hotel downtowns are going to get some renovation because those are key spots for not only the convention center, but for all of us as we invite people from all over the world to enjoy us. Let me take a quick break, Steve, and then I'll be right back with you, please.
Okay.
Steve Kasacek, Ward 6 Councilman. This program brought to you by Perfection Auto Works and Mike Emery. You can trust Mike Emery to repair your car. The portion of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Call Mike Emery at 323-8650. You'll be glad you did. Back in a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Talk Show, August 30th, 2019. This portion of our show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works and Mike Emery at 1046 North Beverly Avenue. Call him at 323-8650 for great auto repair at a fair price. Here's Steve Kasacek, Ward 6 councilperson. Rio Nuevo, okay, is about $65 million for upgrades to the TCC venues. You know, I'm not sure who owns what at the convention center. Do you know? Who the hell owns what?
It's a mixed bag. You know, it's the primary component of the Rio Nuevo district. If the district did not own the convention center, then the district couldn't, by state law, the district would not have been formed. And so when the state law was passed, it was really passed so Glendale could do their thing up there with the athletic facilities they have. So the Rio Nuevo board owns the TCC.
Did we give that to them or what? They didn't buy it, did they? Or
no, well, no. We sublease it from them, we're paying them debt service on it. But that's we have Sports Management Group SMG, who's in actually doing under a management agreement with us, and so sort of a three-headed monster. But they because it's one of it is the primary component of the district. They understand that they have an obligation under state law to they don't have an obligation. They could let it go to hell if they wanted to, but there's no benefit in that. They have a responsibility for making sure that the thing is in great condition. It hasn't been. I was talking in the first segment, I was talking about relationships and building coalitions and bridges. Rio Nuevo is one that 10 years ago, it was an absolutely broken relationship with the city. We were in litigation with each other. The city was trying to run the district, and a lot of, hundreds of millions of dollars were being wasted. We have a great relationship with them now, and they have a very, very quality board with some really savvy members who are making some really good investments. So the $65 million is going to go to what I guess I would call in my other life fan amenities. Things that, the seating, the restrooms, the concession stands, the parking amenities. We've also got a hotel right there on site that they are deeply involved in helping to finance. You mentioned before the break, the Hotel Arizona, there are negotiations going on right now with HSL properties. I know Rio has their own conversations happening. We are having conversations as well to see if we can find a middle ground on getting a flag into that unit, flagship name into that unit as well, so that we have a convention hotel. If you think back when I started doing this in 2008 and 2009, the city was on the verge of spending $200 million through a group called Garfield Traub to backstop bonds to build a convention center hotel. The city would have been on the hook for the debt service had things gone south. And you look all over the country now, and those mega convention center hotels are going belly up all over the place. We would have been spending, and the city of Phoenix is doing this, we would have been spending millions of dollars to get ourselves out from underwater on that if we had gone in that direction. And I take pride in having killed that project in 2010. But at the time said, we don't need to be swinging for the fence. Let the market correct. Let's swing for some singles and doubles. And now we have the AC Marriott. We have the Clarion. We just broke ground on Homestead last week. And we're going to have four or five hotels that combined will get us to where we would have been with that one hotel. But the price points are different. It's private sector dollars. It's Rio stepping in appropriately and not the city backstopping. And it's just being patient and working with the market and working with the private sector. So it's another example of how we're on a good trajectory right now. And it's not just the city doing it alone. It's not Rio Nuevo doing it alone. It's not the county doing it alone. It's all of us working together. And that's why I'm concerned about, you know, let's make sure that we don't go off the rails, because too many good things are happening. And that TCC is a great example of a good thing that's happening. It's going to benefit the entire region.
Well, here's how you go off the rails. You get this community that supports the sanctuary movement, and then we get punished, and then we get in a tremendous battle with the business community over the negative effects of being a sanctuary city and why we needed one when most people opposed it. Even all three of the Democratic nominees that were battling for the nomination for mayor opposed it. Almost everybody I know that opposes it. Except now it's getting some momentum. I just talked with Raul Grijalva, the congressman from Congressional District 3, saying, I support it, I want it to happen, and I don't worry about it. Well, we all worry about it. Same thing with the $15 minimum wage. You want to just get in a big fight with the business community, then try to get that done. There are a lot of things that we'd like to do, might be something that will make you feel good, but they are not the best thing for this city. And if we tilt with Rahina Romero, which we have a very good possibility of doing, far to the left with this city council and some of the things that it looked like they may be a part of the agenda from this next mayor, we're going to pay a real price for that. We're going to turn back all of the progress we've made in the last 3 years, and it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be a disaster. I'm just telling you.
We will tilt somewhat to the left. I think that's okay. That's what this community is. We're not going to go off the rails. As far as that sanctuary is concerned, I continue to implore people, do your homework. I would suggest the same thing to Congressman Grijalva, everybody is opposed, not everybody, the vast majority of the people in this community are opposed to the Trump policies on the border. I've seen them firsthand. I've been in the monastery every single day before they moved over to the county facility. I've seen the impacts of it. But the sanctuary initiative is not going to do a damn thing about those Trump policies. And we should not be sending a message to D.C., and they won't care if we do, other than suing us. Phoenix will sue us first. We should not be sending a symbolic message. I mean, it's just that, you know, take your gun out and shoot yourself in the foot. What we ought to be doing is continuing to set the example in this community, being the giving community that we are. And you were in the monastery and you saw how wonderful this community steps up.
I have seen
Let's
that.
Just keep doing it in it from a positive direction, and not flip off the D.C. people or the Phoenix or the state legislature by passing the sanctuary initiative, because it will only invite litigation.
All right, I get Susie on the phone line here. Susie, welcome to the John C. Scott Show, where Steve Kasachek is my guest from Ward 6, Tucson City Council. Minute and a half. You got 90 seconds.
I know I do. That Zaria Laviria, L-I-V-I-E-R, that has been helping try to push the sanctuary city is not a U.S. citizen.
Really?
No.
I don't.
Yeah. Really, John?
I think
really?
She is, but why would you suggest she's
not a citizen? I'm telling
so what?
You.
Well, it doesn't make a difference. That's what she's obviously an advocate for the sanctuary movement.
I know, but that ought to tell you where this is coming from. I wonder if Raul, what would he say about that?
I don't know what he would say. I would have asked him if I had the chance. What
well,
do you say about it, Steve Kosacek?
I would have called you sooner.
All right, thanks, Susie. Make any difference, Steve Kosacek, citizen or not?
I don't care if he's a citizen or not. I'm concerned about the terms of the initiative itself. And there are two major pieces to this that trouble me greatly. Number one is it would stop our ability to have joint operations with multiple federal agencies, the FBI, the BATF, the Secret Service, the U.S. Marshals, et cetera. And secondly, it would protect certain detainees for crimes such as child molestation, domestic violence. And those are my two major objections to it. Let's not shoot ourselves in the foot by passing something just because we want to make a statement. There are better ways to make that statement. And we've been doing it from a positive perspective in this community for months, if not years.
All right. We're going to be talking with Ed Ackerley. And by the way, this guy went to a lot of trouble to be informed about this race for mayor. And so he wants to say hello to you. He said hello. So thank you. And Steve Kosacek, thank you for being on our show. Appreciate it.
Ed's a smart guy.
He's
a good guy. I like Ed. We've been friends for years.
Yep.
And so this, nothing I've said is a slam against Ed. I just think that we're heading in a different direction, I believe. And I'm going to be there to support that direction, being a voice of reason, but at the same time, understanding that we have one mayor, not seven.
Okay. If you get a quarterback, we'd really appreciate that. If you're not doing anything for the weekend, just find one, anyone. I don't care. Somebody that can just get me one more yard. And please, thanks for being with us.
You got any eligibility left?
No. You don't want any from me. Not at all. Thanks, Steve. I hope you have a great weekend. Have a great holiday. Thanks for being with us.
Take care.
You bet.
Okay.
I want to thank Raul Grijalva, congressman from Congressional District 3. Did he orchestrate the out-of-county money? For his close friend, Raina Romero, who is married to his top aide, as she gets the nomination for the Democratic Party for mayor. He said he didn't. You believe that? Up to you. I want to thank Steve Kosacek, Ward 6 councilperson. Our broadcast today brought to you by Perfection Auto Works. Take your car into Mike Emery's Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. What a great guy, and what a great mechanic. 323-8650. Have a great weekend, everyone. Be safe out there. This has been the John C. Scott Political Forum. Thanks for listening.